This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
More than 2 in 5 young Australians are experiencing loneliness, and that's the stark finding from a new report released this Loneliness Awareness Week. And while loneliness might be something we all feel from time to time, long-term loneliness can have deep impacts on mental health, identity, and even how we see ourselves. And today on Drive, we're joined by two people offering different but equally important perspectives on this topic. Associate Professor Michelle Lim is one of Australia's leading loneliness researchers and a key voice on the policy side of things. We're also joined by Leah Gabriel, a 20-year-old trans queer woman living on the Sunshine Coast who knows what it's like to feel profoundly disconnected and what it takes to find belonging again. Michelle and Leah, welcome to Drive.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Let's start, Michelle, with you. What stood out to you most in the findings of this new report?
So we do know that loneliness is highly prevalent in young people and in many cases and just across the population, because it is a signal for us to connect with people who we find more, you know, those meaningful relationships with. What really struck me, though, is about 1 in 7 young people report what we call persistent loneliness. So this is loneliness across a 2-year period. So they were meeting criteria across those 2 years. And that to me says that, you know, while loneliness is normal, as most of us would feel it from time to time, as you mentioned, you know, that 1 in 7 of young people are staying lonely, which really says that they're really living in an environment that's really not conducive to them kind of making healthy, meaningful social relationships.
Michelle, what are some of the risk factors that might make young people especially vulnerable to loneliness?
Yeah, there are a lot of risk factors, again, that young people don't actually have much control over. So things like financial strain, lower household prosperity, so those economic big factors, death of a loved one, or if they were pregnant, so, you know, we're going all the way to 25, or pregnancy of a partner, those sorts of things actually make people more persistently lonely. But other things that were going on, you know, like lifestyle factors, you know, if they weren't really relating to their neighborhood or low physical activity, or they're not really participating in community. And within those relationships, you know, especially if they were not seeing their friends and family frequently, or they weren't really satisfied with their relationship, their parent, all those things actually contribute to what we call persistent loneliness.
Leah, thank you for being here and also for sharing your story with us. When you think back to your teenage years, what did loneliness feel like for you?
Yeah, of course. Look, for me, you know, loneliness wasn't just sort of a being alone. You know, it was sort of more a feeling like, you know, no one really saw me for who I was. You know, at the time, I didn't really have the language for it yet, you know, for being trans or neurodivergent, you know, but I could tell that I interacted with the world, you know, in a very different way to my peers. And very much I sort of felt stuck in between, where sort of acting too feminine for girls and then sort of too masculine for my sort of girl colleagues. But, you know, there was always a sense of disconnection, you know, even in those sort of a room full of people.
Just on that, about struggling to fit in, feeling too masculine for your female friends and too feminine for your male ones, that sounds like a lot of pressure. How did that shape your sense of self?
Yeah, of course. Look, that sort of in-betweenness really shaped my, you know, early understanding of myself, you know, or really, you know, lack of understanding of myself. You know, I couldn't make sense of why I didn't fit in. You know, so I blamed myself, and I thought that, you know, if I could just change how I acted, that, you know, I'd finally belong. And I spent many, many years, you know, masking, which is, you know, copying how others act and suppressing my own sort of autistic traits and behaviours, you know, in a way to sort of make myself feel safe and find acceptance that I was really desperately craving. And it made it really, really difficult to build connection and real friendships, you know, because I didn't feel so, you know, safe in being my full authentic self.
What role did social media play, Leah, in helping you to find a sense of connection and community?
Yeah, and I feel that it did play quite a big role in finding connection. Online spaces were some of the first places where I really saw people like me, you know, who were queer, trans, you know, or autistic, you know, living openly and just being completely authentic to who they are. And especially when you're isolated or misunderstood offline, you know, social media really can be a lifeline. It just gave me access, you know, to that information, a sense of community, and also just a sense that I wasn't the only one experiencing this, you know, that I wasn't alone.
If you just joined us, we're talking about youth loneliness with Associate Professor Michelle Lim and Leah Gabriel, a 20-year-old advocate who's sharing her story of finding connection after years of isolation. Michelle, just speaking about digital spaces like social media or online communities, how do they play a role in either worsening or easing loneliness? We've just heard from Leah about how it benefited her in connection, establishing connection with others, but we also have a bad side as well, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, part of our research, we also asked young people, and what we did find, as Leah pointed out, you know, if you're coming kind of from a marginalized group, you know, what we call outside group, and you're living in a community, for example, that doesn't understand what you're going through and you don't have like-minded people around you, what young people have told us actually it did help. It actually, they found their people, you know, through those means, and it saved them. And that the flip side, as you mentioned, is that there are things that go on that's quite, you know, difficult to navigate, which is bullying, or, you know, you have a big group chat and then all of a sudden there's a break off to a smaller chat. Those sorts of things then don't help people feel, you know, lonely. So it's a double-edged sword almost. Like, we need to kind of think about how we can use technology for good, as opposed to just, you know, saying, oh, you know, you can't use it at all, because, you know, we know that when we tell young people you can't do something, that doesn't usually work. It's about how do we kind of help young people navigate through those challenges.
From a public health perspective, we've seen the announcement recently that YouTube will be extended to the social media ban for kids. But from a public health and policy perspective, what else needs to happen to address this loneliness on a broader scale?
I think that young people really need to be part of this conversation, especially when it's going to affect them. And I don't feel like their voices have really been well integrated into these major decisions. But also, I think, you know, as part of regulation, you know, government can say to these big tech companies, there are certain things that, you know, would be conducive, and, you know, making those recommendations into the regulation. You know, it's not always about, you know, leaving it with young people and saying, oh, you can't have something. And just kind of put my psychologist hat, you know, point of view as well. We can't really change behavior unless we replace it with something else. So I think we need to think very broadly about what are the other options for young people if it's not these platforms. Like, what can we encourage them? What do we need to do as a community to better support young people's connection or the way they relate to each other on these platforms? So I think we need to actually come back to the table and think more deeply about how these changes would affect young people.
Leah, I'm imagining that had you not had access to social media, you would have felt more lonely. Are you worried about this ban?
Yeah, look, I'd say that I am particularly sort of, you know, worried about that. But I also do agree with, Michelle's perspective based, you know, it is a double-edged sword in terms of it is increased connection, but, you know, it also is quite a significant risk factor in terms, you know, of loneliness. But especially for my community, for young people who are trans and neurodivergent, you know, who don't have that, you know, support at home, which, you know, I'm very privileged to have had, you know, social media might be the only place where, you know, they feel seen. It genuinely can be the first and only space where, you know, someone feels safe enough to be themselves. And, you know, as I said before, you know, even though they are sort of real risks with social media and young people, it's also a really crucial and critical connection point for marginalised youth.
Now, you were eventually diagnosed with autism and ADHD. Did that help you understand why you'd been feeling disconnected for so long?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I really feel that it helped everything sort of click into place. You know, suddenly I could just understand why I had always struggled with, you know, things like unspoken social rules and sort of sensory environments, you know, missing cues and that kind of thing. But just in general, the shift in understanding from, you know, I'm a broken human being to I'm neurodivergent and I just process the world a little bit differently, you know, that was a really huge moment for me. But, you know, getting diagnosed, it really helped me let go of a lot of the shame and just begin connecting a lot more honestly and authentically with others.
Was there a turning point in your journey from feeling isolated to finally actually starting to feel like yourself?
Yeah, look, I would say it wasn't sort of one single dramatic pivotal moment. You know, I really found it was more like slowly putting together a puzzle. You know, coming out of trans was one piece. Getting diagnosed with autism and ADHD was another. But each piece sort of helped me understand myself better and sort of feel more grounded in who I am. But one moment that I'd really love to highlight was contributing to the 2023 Queensland's Birth, Deaths and Marriages Registration Act. Hmm. And that legislation made it much easier for trans people to update the gender marker on their birth certificate. And I was able to take part in the committee hearing process. And my local MP read out my speech in Parliament in support of the bill. And just knowing that I helped shape a piece of legislation that directly impacted my community, that was incredibly powerful. And although it was really scary opening up and sharing my story, it helped me feel less alone in my story because, you know, I knew that I was helping others sort of feel seen in theirs. And sort of 2 years on from that point, it's, you know, really amazing to know that, you know, wherever someone lives in Australia, you know, they can legally affirm their gender.
If someone is listening, someone young and they're feeling quite lonely, just given that experience that you've had in feeling empowered, being able to make a difference, what would you say to them, Leah?
Yeah, of course. Like I'd say that you're not alone, even if it does feel that way right now. And you might not have found your people yet, but, you know, that doesn't mean that they aren't out there. You don't need to change yourself, you know, and change who you are to be worthy of connection. You just need to find those spaces that, you know, where you can be your full self and just start small and never give up on the idea that you deserve to be heard and valued and supported.
Michelle, do we need to start to think about loneliness in the same way that we think about other public health issues?
Yeah, I think that we can't really ignore the scientific evidence that's been building over the last has shown to have equivalent mortality effects or maybe more of an impact on our health, you know, if we kind of compare it to things like obesity, for example. So, you know, we don't have any kind of recommendations around our connections and, you know, the importance of actually nurturing those meaningful connections. So I think we're a little bit behind. Loneliness is traditionally seen as a personal matter, and it's being now repositioned as a kind of a global public health priority by the World Health Organization. So I do think that we need to think a little bit, very hard about what we should be doing in Australia in terms of putting it on the agenda and working across sectors to actually address loneliness.
Michelle and Leah, thank you so much for joining us on Drive today, and Leah for sharing your story.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Warren.
Thank you. That was Professor Michelle Lim from the Sydney School of Public Health and Leah Gabriel, a mental health advocate with Origin, sharing her powerful lived experiences this Loneliness Awareness Week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.